Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
You are now entering the Bad Christian Podcast.
How's it going, all you TSA agents? Yes, TSA agents are the lowest of the low. And I'm going to make this intro short and sweet because I have to go deal with the TSA and customs and fly back from Australia. So I'm going to tell you about a couple of business things, some stuff you want to know, and then we'll get on with the episode. The Classic Crime is going on tour next week. The support bands are McGosh and Hearts Like Lions. Their Salt Lake City show is already sold out, and a few of us are pretty close. So you go to aftontickets.tv/TCC to get tickets for that. All right, so I got to go get on a plane, and I just want you guys all to remember, if you travel internationally, when you get to customs, there's a big difference in I'm here because I'm in a rock band, and I'm here because I'm in a Christian rock band.
3,
yeah,
2, a bum, 1, bum, bum, Joey, bum, drop bum, that bum, bass.
Oh, that's low.
Yeah!
Somebody got low.
It's the Bad Christian Podcast. It's the Bad Christian Podcast. Jesus is Lord. Jesus is Lord.
Okay, welcome to the Bad Christian Podcast, everybody. Matt, Toby, and Joey, once again, down under. We're recording this in our hotel room on the day as Joey is getting ready to fly out, and then Toby and I subsequently. So as you're hearing this, I won't be posting it late on a Sunday night. Instead, I'll be arriving home on an airplane during this. While this goes up, I will in fact be at 30,000 feet over the Atlantic, over the Pacific Ocean.
Yep. Is where but I'll be. Because of that dream Joey had, you'll actually be 30,000 feet under the Pacific Ocean.
Right. Well, I don't think it'll be 30,000 feet under because it's not that deep.
How do you know? You been there?
The deepest.
No. Have you been there?
The deepest trench in the ocean is in the South Pacific, and it is under 30,000 feet. It's about 28,000, 29,000 feet.
I thought the deepest trench was in between Joey's fourth and fifth roll on his neck, his chin.
Shut up, man.
You see what I mean? Like, I guess that joke didn't really make sense.
That's Sorry. Low. Was that just like a low-hanging fruit, low-brow kind
yeah,
of
I'm
thing?
Just in Australia down under. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I don't know. I can't even make good jokes
well, it's at least it's at least a lot easier being just in the room with the three of us. Than
I'm
it
laying
is
like Joey right
crowd.
Now. I'm leaning up against the wall, lounging. Barely making it. I'm lounging. It's unbelievable. Speaking of leaning, it is hilarious how all the Emory guys, Joey's been out with Emory now for almost 2 weeks, and they notice his lounging as so much. It's hilarious watching Andy and Dave watch
both,
you. I mean, it is so funny. Like, you just lounging, chilling. I mean, they can't believe it. Like, that is a true thing. You lounge. Yesterday, I was kind of, you came over to our room. I was kind of leaning back on my bed, and then I got up and went and sat in a chair, and you immediately got up and laid on my bed.
Well, I don't you deny that. Why are you, you're talking about it like I'm going to try to push back. I don't deny that.
I mean, why do you always have to lounge? Is it a need?
No, it's not a need.
Is it?
I'm most comfortable how I'm sitting right now.
It's just a slouch.
Yeah, it's a slouch.
You just have to slouch? I mean, you have to? I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Just like you getting to the bottom of every chair and really get low.
And every bag of chips.
Every bag of chips. You get to the bottom. Every beverage, every Coke. What's the most Cokes you've drank in a row, Joey?
I don't really drink Cokes, thank you very much.
That wasn't the question.
I don't know.
All right,
because it's too high of a number to be able to be counted.
Okay. Don't you think it's easier? How do you feel about sitting back in a room now, just the three of us, versus being up, you know, having to get juiced up and address the crowd like on the live episodes?
I think there's something to be said for the live crowd. I think it makes us, you know, a little bit more excited too and on point. Like being in this room with just you three guys, with you two guys, three if you count the extra Joey. It's just a little bit more laid back and chill. Like, it's hard to get more pumped up right now. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in a hotel room just kind of relaxing. So this feels way less pumped up than when we recorded the podcast.
So we recorded last night at the Spotted Cow in Toowoomba, Australia.
Ooh, that was
cool. That episode will be out on this Thursday. But tell them about that show. Did you enjoy that last night?
Man, I loved it. I thought it was so cool. It was really neat just to – I mean, we're at Easterfest, which is a Christian festival, and they actually told people, hey, the Bad Christian Dudes will be at a bar. Go check it out. And I thought that was – I think that's the first time that's ever happened in the history of any Christian festival or Christian event almost. I mean, I know like some people are more lax on their strictness of drinking alcohol or what that looks like. You know, some divisions of church are that way. But, I mean, for the most part, I don't think we've ever been to a Christian festival where any type of tolerance for alcohol was even come close to being allowed. And for them to be able to say, hey, listen, we're just going to let you guys have a conversation and we'll leave it up to the Holy Spirit is awesome. I mean, our goal was not to, oh yeah, leave the festival and come drink. That wasn't the goal of it. The goal is, hey, come hang out. If you want to drink, go ahead. If you don't. I mean, let's have a real conversation. So that part, man, was just really refreshing for sure.
Yeah. And I like talking in front of people because there's a pressure to it. Like, it's like you have to, it's totally different dynamic, but you have to be up. You have to feel like, you know, you have to connect with people. It matters. It's like the stakes are high. Like, here we could stop or start over or whatever, but out there, it's like, it's real. So I really get a kick out of that because I think the fundamental thing that I like to do the most, the reason I like podcasting is to do communication. I find that the most frustrated I am is when I want somebody to understand and I can't make them understand.
I don't understand what you're saying.
It pisses me off. No, it really is frustrating. When people criticize me the most, they're saying, Matt, you got to stop talking. You're just going on and on or whatever. And I'm thinking, but you don't understand yet. That's why I have to keep talking.
But sometimes I think you misinterpret. Like, I have been in situations with you where I disagree with you, and you take it. I think you're prideful and thinking you're right.
Right.
You're like, the only way he can disagree is
if he
doesn't understand.
That's exactly the way I feel.
And that's just not right.
I think that you clearly don't understand what I'm saying, or else you would agree. So the fact that you don't agree shows me that you must not understand.
Don't
so
you
I need
that's
to explain
a little arrogant?
It again.
Don't you think that's a little arrogant?
I can't help it. That's what I'm saying. I get that's one of the most frustrating things to me in the whole world. And so that's why I like podcasting or a live audience. It's almost like a challenge. Like, it's a skill. Like, I want to be able to say something, connect. It matters. They understand.
You're one of the biggest advocates, though, of telling people, hey, if you've never changed your mind on anything even major, then you're not doing enough thinking and evaluating.
Right.
So why would you, of all people, be in a situation where someone doesn't someone doesn't agree and you assume they don't understand?
No, I mean, I'm okay with sometimes people agree or disagree, and then I understand that we disagree. But I feel like a lot of times it's because they don't understand or aren't seeing it well enough. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, there's definitely people that are intelligent or, you know, have better points than me, in which case I can clearly understand. But I feel like we have to get on the same page before we can disagree.
Yeah.
So I can't usually let things go until then. But live crowd, really awesome.
I thought it was cool because I could tell sometimes they couldn't even understand what we were saying, and not because it didn't make sense. Yeah, it was just accent. Like, I saw a couple of faces like, what? And I thought that was really interesting because, I mean, we're speaking English just like them, but, I mean, our enunciation, the way we say things, they don't totally understand anyway. So there is a little bit of a language barrier, even with people that speak the exact same language as us.
Oh, I know. Can you imagine, like, when you had to train, if you had to, like, the people that listen to us in other countries, I'm sure it just, the cultures are so different and different languages and people, a lot of people listen to this podcast that English is their second language. So how in the world could they be expected to pick up on the nuances of a joke or something like that? It must just be terrible.
That is the scariest thing for me when I think about the Bible and we're trying to pick up, you know, what they were actually trying to say and what their culture. I mean, we have the words, but it means, you know, there's tons of times where in every language, what you're saying is sarcastic. But you're saying something, you know, whatever. Oh, man, look at that blue sky. But actually, there's a tornado headed this way, and you just made a joke because it's really scary or whatever.
Think of the subtlety. Like, I watched Dumb and Dumber one time when I was in Costa Rica, and it was, you know, overdubbed in Spanish. And so that movie is so good because it's the way that Lloyd Christmas, the way he says stuff is even so important.
Yeah.
And I was watching it in Spanish, and I know only a little bit of Spanish, but enough to even understand the lines he was saying. Because I knew what the lines were. Then I heard him in Spanish. And I was just thinking, and the voice was different. The articulation, the delivery was different. And the words were still there from the script.
Right.
And I was thinking, this isn't funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's, if you just watch this scene, he made that face on the screen and moved his mouth, and you heard a Spanish guy say, blah, 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 whatever it is, then it wasn't funny. It didn't translate at all. And that's the same. That's a culture right next door in the same time period with the closest possible language. So if that didn't translate, well, how could you possibly think of a time 2,000 more years ago with a language that has almost no relation to ours? How could you? How could you possibly? The cultural and the language and the time differences are
totally.
It's unreal.
Yeah, and I can give you three examples of things now that I can say, and you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. But 2,000 years ago or 2,000 years from now may not be the case. For example, once upon a time in a land far, far away, you guys knew automatically. Oh, that's fiction. Mm-hmm. I mean, and what Toby is saying, we read the Bible, and what if there's things like that to where people back in that culture, they know exactly, oh, that's, well, he's talking about blah, blah, blah. Like, what if there's something in Job that's worded that in a way where those people back then were just like, oh, this is just a story.
Like, you're saying, so if I started, if I went to my wife and said, once upon a time there was, and I, you just open with that phrase, she would, it would indicate to her fiction is coming.
Yeah, that's it. Well, this is a story Matt's going to tell me. Here's another one. I could care less. Well, you mean I could not possibly care less. But if I say, dude, I could care less where we go, you know.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's irritating, by the way.
But everybody knows what I'm talking about. If I say I could care less where we eat, they know that Joey means it doesn't matter. But I should say I couldn't
could
possibly,
not care less is the appropriate
and then
way
another
to say
one
that.
Is how about blah blah blah. What is that supposed to mean? How about?
Yeah.
How about? I mean, and someone studying the English language, that makes no sense at all. But if Toby says, how about, I know where he's headed.
So you think there's clues in Job that indicate that it's a
mythical I was just using
book.
That as an example.
There
using
could
that
be,
example.
But we just don't know. But that's the thing that scares me. Like, what if the entire Bible is true and awesome, but God just has a great sense of humor, and then we just let all the stiff, non-funny people interpret it for us? So, you know what I mean? Like, what if God was like, come on, man, and he tells stories, and it's like, God's just awesome, funny, like the coolest guy at the bar hanging out, and then we just let 65-year-old white men tell us, yeah, this is what he was saying, and it was really serious, and we totally missed all the extra great things about God, and just because they go, no, we can prove it. You know, this is what we know so much.
Well, it's kind of like those.
It's a little scary.
It's like those daggone pictures taken in the 1800s of a dude and his wife, and they're both looking with these serious faces. You know, some of those dudes are trippy. Like, right when the picture was taken, immediately they start tripping around and everything. Yeah. But you're looking at it, why are people so serious back then?
Totally.
But yeah, I mean, the Bible, get a little instructor here, but the Bible, I mean, it's crazy. We're talking thousands of years and from hundreds, and I'm probably underestimating hundreds of cultures. Over the course of thousands of years, man. I mean, that's. I just think we should approach the Bible with a little more respect. And when I say respect, with a little more, maybe I'm wrong with how I'm interpreting something.
By respect, you mean it's not true.
No, I don't mean that. You know that's not the case. But I do think these sorts of conversations make people nervous because I'm sure some people are hearing us and they're thinking, man, those three guys, at some point, they're gonna be bizarred.
Well, yeah,
they're going to be like Dave Bazan. They're not going to think that the Bible's true.
What will it mean for this? Like, how good of an episode will it be the day that I finally tell you guys I don't believe anymore?
Oh man, I just don't think that can happen.
No, I don't.
I guess I really don't think. But I agree with you, Joey.
Wait, hang on. You don't think that could happen? That's interesting to me
because he knows you.
No, I know. I'm just saying. It does trouble me sometimes that the things that I hear us say are similar to things that I hear people like Dave Bazan say or used to had said on his way to. Yep. Or, you know, I told you earlier today that I think sometimes you sound like Rob Bell,
right?
Which I'm not saying he's the worst person or even bad. I kind of like some of the stuff he says, but
you sound like Oprah sometimes.
Yeah, so a lot of times I get accused of sounding like Oprah. So, you know, what is that like? Why? What confidence do you have that we're just not on a slower decay away from what we believe?
Well, here's what I really believe. I believe that...
What's really crazy is I'm very, very interested in what you... Like, sometimes we're just carrying a conversation. Like, I'm on the edge of my seat, not literally.
You're definitely not literally on the edge of your seat.
But
you're
really
well, deeply back in the seat.
The reason why I think that you guys and myself are not going to leave Christianity is because we value so highly the need for a savior. So that I do not think that can ever escape what we're saying. And not saying that Rob Bell doesn't believe that. I'm not talking about, all I'm talking about is us three right here. Like, I think that, like, I mean, you know how much I love Dave Design, and just that interview is probably my favorite interview we've ever done on the podcast. I thought he was just really honest and it was really engaging and all that stuff. I think on a certain level, he just went, nah, I can handle this. I don't need that. And I can't. I don't think y'all can either. Like, no matter what, even at the darkest times where I'm like, is everything I believe bullshit? Like,
but
I
mean, why does that mean Jesus? Every time you say everybody needs a savior, someone could say, yeah, I agree with that. I just don't think it's Jesus.
Who else is it?
I agree. Yeah, what else would it be?
I agree with you.
There's no other religious system that offers anything that... here's the thing. No matter what, our religious system, our faith book, our... whatever Jesus following, it is unique in the sense that it is the only thing that resonates with me as far as, yeah, because I know people really are shitty. I know that. There's nothing else really.
But what if there's no savior? That's what I'm saying.
There may not be, for all I know, but I know I need one. I know everybody needs one. I know everything outside of that.
My point would be us, where we lie is either there's nothing.
Yeah.
Or you got to have something.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, either way, we're bad. Human race is going to fix it and get better.
Right.
That's been proven over and over and over. With every technology, we only do worse things.
Yeah, there's zero chance my logic will eventually land at, but if we could probably do better, or the human race is getting better or something. I'm not on that.
You could probably correct me with my pronunciation, but like the ontological argument for God has to do with basically if we can come up with the concept of God, there has to be a God.
The ontological argument says, I believe, is existing is better than not existing. So if there could be a God or not be a God, if there could be a God, then he would have to exist because that's better than not existing. I believe that's...
Yeah, but I've heard it also where if we can... The very concept that there is a God means that there has to be a God. In other words, we can't manufacture the concept of God unless there was God. Hmm. So maybe that's another facet.
I don't know, but I would necessarily agree with that. Somebody said the other day that I heard somewhere that it's weird we have the concept of God, like of deity, for a long time. Like when your kids are born, they actually at some point think you're all-knowing and all-powerful. That's their assumption, in fact. When they're a two and one, their assumption is you control everything and you know everything. They would have no reason to believe otherwise.
Yeah.
So you're already comfortable with the notion of a deity, like just fundamentally. Hmm. Don't you think?
But what Joey's saying is that's because we just...
Well, you're saying that's of God.
That's part of it, yeah.
I think if
there was no God.
If we have the capacity to... even argue about whether or not there is a God, I think someone could argue, well, then there's a God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think that's like a foolproof argument to where there's no holes in that. But think about it. If we have the capacity in our mind, like an ant, little ants and little bugs, they're not debating with each other whether or not there's a God.
True.
I mean, their minds don't even go there.
So do you think sometimes we get so frustrated about or feel like we're the negative side of, or just like looking at Christianity and church and people and even the Bible, what is it all supposed to mean that you can get so fed up with it? That do you think it could all boil down to, like, if you strip everything away, it's just, I can't even say about anything, but I do believe I need a Savior, and I do believe Jesus lived, died, and was resurrected. Like, if I get really bent out of shape about everything, and I think everything, I must not know anything, everything's fake, that's the only thing that I think I would have to hang on to remain in the club.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
Do you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Like, what if I just said, I promise you, like, you could see me there maybe in 2 years or having a rough time, right? Like, I don't know anything. Like, I'm definitely choosing this, or, you know, after my third wife, this. And you'd be like, but do you believe that Jesus died and actually resurrected after that? I don't see any chance of me not believing that happened.
Yeah, I just can't get away from that. I just know if anything in the world has proven God to me is me, like in my actions, like how I want things, how I desire things that are self-serving or selfish or self-motivated is the reason why I would even do something. All this stuff is like, it is so much a part of me that I go, yeah, I can't do anything. And so, man, if there's a God, yeah, I need that. I need that guy to intervene, change me, shape me, show me what I'm supposed to be. Because whenever I see the good in humanity or the fellowship or the kindness and all that stuff, it always just seems bigger. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't just seem like just two people hanging out. Like, when you see people get married, you're not just thinking, oh, well, they like each other and that's it. You think of something bigger. We have to come up, we come up with terms to describe stuff, not just, okay, now they are this sit together for this, this, and this. Like, we have terms that make things way bigger. We explain things in bigger terms because of our relationships, our friendships, our marriages, our relationships with each other are all so much bigger than just two people talking, and they mean so much more to us. So I think always it comes back to Jesus, and that you got to have God in your life, in a sense of you won't. Without God, I just think it gets emptier and emptier and emptier, even to the point of, I think people that don't believe in God still have God. I think God has that much influence that they get to benefit from his goodness and grace as well. And they don't even have to acknowledge it or believe in it or anything. I think God is still that good that everybody gets to benefit from it, to the point where you can even say, yeah, this is just me. It's not even God. Yeah. But I don't think that to be the case. One other thing I was going to say, too, is...
I got a question for you, too, by the way.
Okay. Can you save it till after I do this?
Save it till after the podcast?
Yeah. Can you save it till next week? I want to hear your question, but real quickly, one of the things we've been doing is some forums, and they've been really cool. And we actually did a forum today about pornography. And guess what got brought up? Triple X Church and X3 Watch.
Yep,
it was really cool. And we didn't even have to do it. Our good friend Chad Johnson from Come and Live brought it up. And I was like, oh, man, that's awesome. So I wanted to take a moment and just say to our sponsors, X3 Watch, that we appreciate it so much. You guys are even making an impact here in Australia. I mean, it is awesome that somebody that sponsors our podcast has honestly been supporting us from the beginning. Folks like Craig Gross, we really appreciate it, and they make this podcast happen. And so, at the very least, even if you just want to keep looking at porn right now, just go click on a link and help this podcast. If you like this podcast going, click on a link and help this podcast to keep going by supporting us and supporting X3 Watch. But I guarantee you, if you get it, you'll start changing your life a little bit. It changes your viewing habits on the internet. It changes the way you are alone. It helps you to be more accountable, not only with friends for you, but with you and your friends. So this is a great opportunity right now to change your life. Very simply, X3 Watch, it will help you to stop doing things that you don't want to do, like looking at pornography and segregating yourself from your friends by this secret life or secret habit that you have.
How crazy was it that pastor on the panel with us said that there is a secular movements of people trying to get off porn? He said one of the reasons why is because 20-year-olds are experiencing erectile dysfunction because mm-hmm. they pretty much,
He just said in a general way, you burn out your circuits, is what he said.
Is that true? I wondered in that moment.
Well,
you don't
have circuits, you know. There's not.
Yeah, that was metaphorical. Well,
I know.
But what does that actually mean? I did wonder that. Like, I mean, is he saying you masturbate too much?
Well, he's saying you're getting so much stimulation
sexual stimulation.
Yeah, the chemicals and the receptors. So it's not circuits. That's just an analogy to use. But your pathways are so blown up that you can't, a regular stimulus, what doesn't give you.
He's saying you need something worse or more harder.
Porn is so, you're so aroused by such graphic, crazy, vulgar sex stuff. Then when you're in a committed relationship where a girl's not as comfortable with that stuff, maybe you can't get up.
That makes sense. Just like they do cycles with steroids or something. It works for a while, or medicines, they do cycles with them. Maybe that's the same thing with porn. You look at it enough, then you just need more or worse or more graphic, whatever it might be. But anyway.
So where do they go?
x3watch.com/badchristian. Check it out today.
Bam.
All right. What was your question you want to ask?
So, Matt, I feel...
Okay, now here comes our guest. I'm really excited about it. No, go ahead, Joey.
So, Matt, I think has very... I know exactly where he's coming from, and I've pushed back on this a little bit, but I understand where he's saying as far as a lot of the things I'm saying sounds Rob Bellish, but...
Rob Bellish, is that a term now?
Rob Bellish.
Man, you just went Bellish on that.
So, Toby, one thing you've been saying, in my opinion, even tips the scales in that direction. And I think you may have said it on the podcast before, but I want to give you a chance to explain further. And I want to hear you explain further, because to me, it's like if someone doesn't know you, they can be like, whoa, what in the hell did Toby just say? And that is, you have definitely said regretfully in a, oh, this bothers me way, if I'm wrong about everything I believe, then I spent my whole life trying to get people to serve a God that's not true, trying to get them to have a sexuality that doesn't matter, and trying to force my... I'm putting words in your mouth. You didn't say these exact things.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
What do you mean when you say that? Because that sounds like a, man, there's a very good chance. If you're losing sleep over that thought, then you're thinking there's a very good chance that I'm wrong with Jesus. And I know that's not what you mean because I'm your friend, but that's what it sounds like.
No. What my point is, just like people always say, well, man, you know, I'd rather believe in God and have the opportunity to go to, you know, if you're wrong, you go to hell. If I'm wrong, all that matters is I just disappear into eternity. It just goes black and that's it. But my point with that was, if you take that to the opposite side, though, if you can say, hey, I'm a Christian, so that means if I'm right, then I get to go to heaven. And if you don't believe in God, you're wrong, then you know you got it way worse than me. You go to hell. Well, what if Christians are trying to enforce just what they believe, and what if they end up being wrong? That means that you were spending your time keeping people of the same sex from getting married, or you were spending your time stopping people from enjoying freedoms or liberties that didn't matter anyway. You know what I mean? Like, why do you people should just get to live their life, and you're trying to force yourself on them. So my point is, I don't want to spend my life telling people what not to do. That is a waste of my life. I don't even think that's what Jesus did. I mean, it felt like Jesus was always telling people what to do. Like, you know, wake up, do more. And so I just think for us, if we just get caught up on, I'm a Christian, so I got to do this, to spread the gospel, and this is what I got to get people to do so they'll stop sinning, then we're in a bad shape. And our faith becomes about us and our works and the things that we are strong enough not to do, as opposed to just loving people and figuring it out. I mean, a lot of things you say, I agree with. You know what I mean? Like, it is talking about homosexuality. You just like our Pastor Greg said from our church, it's something that you have to wrestle with.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it's not just cut and dry. Oh, all homosexuality, no matter what, is sin, and it's not cut and dry that it's not sin. You know what I mean? Like, you have to really do that. And where I'm at, I feel like sometimes can change or blah, but I always land on, if Jesus says some form of sexuality is wrong, it probably is. I mean, if Jesus says that what I'm doing right now, like talking about X3 Watch, whatever sin or whatever thing that I'm going through, would I give it up for God? No matter what I felt about it, would I give it up for God? Whether I think it's right, wrong, or whatever, would I give something up for God? And that's how I judge where we're supposed
Which
to be.
Which brings up a really interesting point, is a lot of pro-gay affirming churches, I guess is the definition, would say, yeah, exactly. Jesus doesn't say anything about homosexuality. Nothing. You know,
right.
It's Paul's letters. Why couldn't, you know, Paul be wrong and all that sort of stuff? So basically you're not saying, because it seems like the more you are concerned with that thought, that would also mean the more you are doubting what you believe in. But you're not saying that at all.
No, I'm not. I don't think so. All right, let's bring on our guest. This week we have Silver Ring Thing on, and it's gonna be good. It could get a little uncomfortable. We're gonna be talking about sexual things, yeah, with those teenagers, those damn teens and 20-year-olds.
What is Silver
trying
Ring
to have
thing?
Sex
Joe,
outside
you,
of marriage.
You went to a Silver Ring Thing. You know what it is.
Well, first I want to give Toby props for coming up with a better phrase. When we were in college, he used to tell the girls, "No ring, no ding."
Right.
And so Silver Ring Thing probably stole that from him.
Yep.
But basically Silver Ring Thing is...
No ring, no ding.
That's right, baby. So they're a ministry that sets out to help with youth ministries from a Christian perspective, helping them to be abstinent. And the Silver Ring Thing is basically a promise ring. So a bunch of kids come together, bunch of lights, bunch of fireworks, bunch of cool, hip teachers and music and stuff. And
then they
sent
just tell
away.
Them, they give them lights and fireworks and say, don't have sex.
Exactly.
And then send everybody home.
Yep. Keep your pants on.
Yeah, keep your pants
basically,
on.
I think their motto is, to be absent of the vagina means to be present with the Lord.
All right. We'll Let's be right back on. From with Jason from Silver Ring Thing.
Hey guys, this is Dan Koch, singer and guitar player for the BC music band Pacific Gold. And I want to let you know, our new album, Sing My Welcome Home, is now out on BC Music. It's an album of 11 tracks of rewritten hymns. We take lyrics from old hymns and write all new melodies and music and everything. But rather than spending a bunch of time talking about it, let's just play some clips from the album.
Oh,
The new Pacific Gold album, Sing My Welcome Home, is now out. Online, in stores, pacific-gold.com, iTunes, all of it.
Hey, how long have you been with Silver Ring Thing? And obviously at some point we want to explain to people what exactly that is. How long have you been working with those guys?
I've been here about 11 years now, believe it or not.
Yeah, I was a, gosh, I think this is when I was a youth pastor at two different churches. I think this was back in 02 and took the kids. I definitely, you know, before we even dive into what it is and stuff, just want to applaud you guys for just stepping up and trying to do something about something. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just you know, y'all put
don't
a lot.
Fall for it, Jason. He's just buttering you up to rip you apart in a little bit.
That's not true. You're the person that just said that is the biggest cynic here for sure. So no, but so Silver Ring Thing, how I was explaining it to Toby, tell me how accurate this is, but basically you guys are asking kids to commit to no sex from that point on until marriage. So some of them obviously have already crossed that bridge. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, within our team that travels the country, we've got virgins, non-virgins. I mean, there's a whole mix of everyone on our team. And the point is someone coming to a realization at some point to say that this is God's plan for my life. And no matter my past, I want to live it forward from here forward. So, I mean, we got some pretty crazy stories of sexual past and history and people being willing to boldly say, you know what, I lived it and it wasn't all it panned out to be and I want something more.
Yeah. So for our listeners' sake, I mean, this is a, you know, the kids show up huge. I mean, I don't know if there's other forms of it, but they show up huge auditorium, lights, you know, awesome videos, just killer music. I mean, just a killer vibe and scene and super entertaining. And so you guys have the kids' attention for sure. Yeah. So what about kids that leave Silver Ring Thing thinking to themselves, yeah, this sounds good, but I'm probably going to have sex anyway.
Joey, I'd love to know some more about Silver Ring Thing first, too.
We haven't even gotten really, I mean, a lot of people, most people don't know. So, Jason, just give us a rundown. Like, when we're talking about Silver Ring Thing, you said it's about abstinence or from here on out, and it's obviously a Christian organization. But what do you guys do? You show up at a building, and what do you do?
Yeah, we got a team of teens and young adults, basically 18 to 23 year olds, and they travel the country. We do about 80 events a year, and come in. We bring in all of our own concert equipment, so they're doing the whole sound, lighting, video gig, and it's a 2.5 hour event that has dramas, music, video, testimonies, all kinds of stuff, and it's all basically talking about why is it important? How is it possible to do it in today's culture to live this kind of commitment out? How do you do it practically, spiritually, you know, and then ultimately, you know,
to not have sex.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
At all. Exactly. Outside of marriage. It says on your website that you boldly proclaim that sex outside of marriage is not in God's design. Is that the
correct
way to put it?
Absolutely. Yep. And so that's the core of it, is that, you know, God has a plan for your life, including your sex life and how you live. And he's created sex to be something designed within the context of marriage. So we're just trying to by that peer example, you know, it's so important that teens see people that look like them, talk like them, act like them, saying, I can do it, you can do it too. But they do it, we do it in a real cool environment. And so it really kind of attracts them, draws them in. But ultimately, I think it's the testimonies and the example of those going before them that is really what gives them the hope to say, well, I guess it is possible, because you don't see it many other places.
Uh-huh. And they leave with a silver ring, right? Like a promise ring?
Correct. Yeah, we've got back in 1995 when this started, there was a jeweler in Arizona that basically created a ring for us, and it just has scripture 1 Thessalonians 4 verses 3 to 4 on it and two crosses, like a cross on each side. And so if you want to make that commitment and you want something to remind you of that and a symbol and outward expression of it, you can wear a ring.
So why this issue of all issues to tackle? Why sex and purity?
Well, I think if you look at Scripture, I mean, it's pretty clear when the apostle says that that there is no sin like sexual sin, that there's something unique to sexual sin that really moves us away from the heart of God and his plan and really the future. And so I think there's obviously, I have my own personal ties to it from not, you know, not being a virgin when I got married. My wife was, I was not. And so I know what I carried into our relationship, some of the different guilt and some history and some comparison, some of those things that we kind of worked through and still work through 10 years later, you know. And so I don't want any teens to have that same experience. I want them to be able to come in and have something that is unique, and it's kind of unstained by a lot of the past and a lot of emotional and spiritual baggage. And I think if you look at the culture, it's probably the biggest fight that we have in this culture, you know, sexuality. And what is that? How do you live that out in the context of how God designed us and what he desires for us? It certainly
is a frontier, yeah. You know, that's changed a lot. I mean, obviously with internet pornography, but just the sexualization of culture in general. I mean, it's changed a ton in our lifetime as far as how the casual people see sex and relationships, at least. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not even frowned upon. Like, you know, when our parents grew up, like, you needed to hide that stuff, where now right. parents will say, hey, you guys can use the guest room before right. you go to school.
I mean, no, it's not like... hidden. I mean, we're here in Pittsburgh, and the bishop of the Catholic diocese here in Pittsburgh came out in a news article just recently, said, hey, 80% of the couples that we are interviewing for premarital counseling are already living together. So if they're living together, they're right. certainly having sex. And so they're not even,
sure.
they're not in the least bit even ashamed to say, we want to get married and we're already living together. So yeah, the times have changed, you know, but I think God's word doesn't. And that's what we're trying to call people to something better and greater. Mm-hmm.
Well, I find this really interesting because on one hand, I completely agree, and we talk about pornography and stuff all the time and how it's damaging, and I really, really believe that, and I believe in God's design for marriage and marital sex and all this. And at the same time, what this is and what you're saying makes me feel a little uncomfortable or something, because outwardly, at least, it feels like... I guess it feels unrealistic, and that might show the quality of my heart or where I'm at. But like you said, 80% of people are this, Christians and non, and everybody I know, it just feels like it's just not possible. I know it sounds silly, but it sounds like it's not possible, and it makes me feel like, man, you know, these guys are out there telling everybody you have to have 100% abstinence, and I just don't have any experience with that or know anybody that does. So it seems like...
Right.
Oh, it makes me feel like, is it going to make people feel guilty if they're not able to do that?
You would have not made it as one of Jesus' disciples, Matt. I mean,
no, I
wait.
Know it.
Yes,
I know
you would
it.
Have.
And I think we for many years, we try to frame the conversation as it's a pursuit. It's to persevere. It's not perfection. You know, again, in this mm-hmm. culture, and given the fact of, you know, back when the Bible was written, you know, you got people married in mid-teen years, if not earlier. Now we got people getting married in late 20s. And so odds are a majority of people going into marriage are going to carry some kind of sexual past into that. And so what we talk about is certainly the goal would be for anyone. Hey, if you can make it to your marriage bed as a virgin and you two come together like that, man, your odds of a successful marriage, of fruitful marriage, of happiness, of trust, I mean, every statistic shows that is certainly the ideal. But for a lot of people, it's not going to be that. And so we don't say our message hasn't been perfection. It's been, do you agree this is the best plan for your life? And are you going to fight for it? Are you going to get in the battle?
Yeah. You know? So what I honestly, this is where, like, I really do want to ask you some questions and hear your answers, not to challenge what you're saying, but to actually hear because I'm kind of along the lines of mad of, it feels like sometimes when we say don't have sex, then everybody will still have it, but you just hide it. You know what I mean? Same way as, like, my parents said, no matter what, alcohol is sin. Like, not drinking it even, like, alcohol is sin. And they told me all that stuff. And then when I got to high school and I saw, man, everybody that was cool was drinking, and it didn't seem that bad. In fact, it seemed fun. I was like, oh, that's not totally true. Like obviously, like you said, sex is great and awesome and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then I guess the idea would be to convince people. But my question would be, too, then, so, like, if you go back in history, just like you said, everybody was getting married earlier and very early on. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's some people that say, like, Mary was, like, 14 years old or something like that.
Yeah,
Mary,
12 to 14
years old. Yeah, so, I mean, are we living in a culture now that where we're saying, yeah, because, I mean, it seems like most people tell their kids to wait. Hey, make sure you go to college. Make sure you do this. But wait on the sex part. Plan your whole life, but wait on the sex part because of marriage. I mean, what about... Maybe we should be teaching people to get married earlier. Like I know that sounds crazy, but that would be a bizarre. No, you can't do that. You can't do that. But I mean, it would. Like, I don't know what the statistics are, but I would.
Like, how old were you, Toby, when you got married?
I was 28 years old.
Yeah, and I was 30 years old, 29 years old when I got married. So, I mean, I just can't imagine being 16 and go, like, what a distant memory it would be for me to have gone to a conference when I was 16 and got a silver ring to by the time I was 29 years old. That's another half of my life. It's just so.
So what are you? I
it
mean,
feels to me like, yeah. I mean, I'm just saying I'm pessimistic, but you know what
yeah.
I mean.
What do you? Yeah. What do you think about that, Jason?
Yeah. I mean, granted, like you said, it's not an easy thing to conceptualize or consider. I think when I look at, you know, where culture is, where culture was, you know, when the Bible was written, Paul, in many of the letters, when you talk about Romans, Corinthians, Ephesians, is writing to a culture that in many ways was actually worse than ours. Prostitution was cool. It was just normal. That was actually a form of birth control. If a husband didn't want to divvy up his inheritance anymore, you go out and have sex with a prostitute. It was worship. Pedophilia was normal. So in many ways, what's different in our culture is what we have tolerated in terms of the images and a lot of things that are going on. But sexually speaking, in some ways, we're more conservative today than we were in those cultures 2,000 years ago. And still, he said, avoid everything outside of marriage. Now, granted, marriage was earlier, but that's still what it is. And I think if we look at it, you know, it matters on how we look at what is the ramifications of sex as a teenager. You know, so if you get a 13, 14-year-old girl getting pregnant or get an STD, some of those things, or carrying some of those emotional and spiritual kind of pains later into marriage. Why do we have such high divorce rates today? You know, why do we have a lot of the issues? Why is the teen pregnancy rate so high? You know, a lot of these things, they're all sexually related issues. And so, you know, my stance and my belief, I've sat in this seat long enough to see people that have lived it out. I've seen enough that have made the commitment, who've gone on to get married, who've shared their stories, sent us videos, you know, said how that commitment made a huge part in their life. And I think in our culture, especially within the church, we have undervalued the strength and the power of the Holy Spirit. Because it says that the grace of God appeared to all men, which equips us, enables us to say no. So really, by the grace of God and the Spirit living in you, you should be able to do this. But most of us, we still fall to some of the stuff. We fall to the temptation. We don't, you know, we don't live in that strength that we could have or should have. So
yeah, my question for Matt and Toby is, I mean, I'm trying to, I don't even know if you have an underlining reason for these questions, but are you saying because it seems far-fetched, don't pursue?
I mean, No. Okay, that's not what I'm saying.
Let me go a little farther with it here. What I'm saying is this. So, when you picture somebody, like what I'm worried about, what I don't know, and this is as a father, my daughter's not even two, so I'll go ahead and just picture her when she's 16, 17 years old. Do I want her to have sex? Of course not. I do not at all. I don't want her to until she's married and whatever that is. So what I'm curious about in a genuine way is what's the mechanism by which we preach or tell or suggest abstinence like this and say it's possible, but it's hard and you got to fight for it versus, I know my dad really wants this, but I'm messing up right now and I've messed up a little bit and I'm thinking about messing up worse and I have to pretend to be a way that I'm not and I can't own up to it. And now she's got on top of that, because statistics say she will sleep with somebody. She's going to. I mean, statistically, I'm not that uncomfortable saying that. And so what's going to happen then? Is she going to feel shame and guilt and condemnation? That's what I don't know the answer to. And then is she going to be less likely to tell the truth and hide it from me and, you know, those kinds of things?
Yeah, Jason, what's your stance on, like, people that go through your program, show up, get the ring, really feel committed, and then they obviously fall away and have sex later? Or do you even know statistics like that? Is that like something you guys track? Like,
yeah, years ago we had government funding for a little while, and we did track that for a period of about 2 years. But I would say it was woefully inaccurate to our benefit, because it said that in 2 years' time, more than 85% of people had still kept the commitment, and I think that's way too high, because it was a voluntary survey. You know,
so you think people are having sex and lying?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of it obviously depends on you know, where you're coming from. You know, I would say the girl that's or a girl or guy who's been like extremely sexually active leading up to this moment, and then hears the message, knows it's true, senses in her heart like that's what I want to do. Her struggle is much different than the kid who's 12 years old, never had a girlfriend. You know, and so the likelihood of her falling back into that for a period. And maybe, but what does that look like? And that's why I say we measure success as, are you, you know, so if a girl comes to our event at 16 years old, puts on a ring, makes a commitment at 20 years old, she's a sophomore in college and, you know, dates a guy, she thinks he's the one, they take things too far, she has sex, she breaks it up and she's like, this isn't what I wanted. And then 4 years, 5 years later, she gets married. That's success. You know what I mean? Like she bought in knowing that this is the plan and she felt this conviction that says, I have something more. But she messed up along the way. But don't we all? I mean, that's the whole idea of the Christian life. You know, we didn't say I follow Christ and now I'm perfect.
Yeah.
So,
Toby, where do you want to go with that? I mean, I think that makes sense. You're saying that you have to leave the door open for the failure to be there in a way that's not condemning somehow. And I'm not.
Well, I mean, that's what we're all saying. I mean, like,
that's what we're talking
just
about.
Just sitting here, as soon as you said that, I was thinking about Matt's daughter's name's Georgia, and I was just thinking about her 2 years old. And then, you know, I have two daughters myself, five and one. And I just think, man, what? I mean, you're right. I mean, we all have to at least admit mathematically the chances are they are going to have sex. I have three kids, and I guess if I had to bet my life on it, I would say they probably will. Now I'm going to do everything I can not to, but my parents did that. My parents said, "Don't have sex. Don't fool around. Don't do these things." You know, it did feel that way. Like I thought there was something bad about it. And so when you said that, man, I actually just typed it in. And Jason, I'm sure you probably know all these statistics, but like the one I thought was like by age 22, 24, 89% of males and 92% of females have had sex. And like, it, you know, it starts at like, I think the earliest age, it says a lot, 25% of males and 26% of females lose their virginity at 15. Yeah. And so
let's dispel one more thing, since we know most of the people in our country and on that survey are Christian. You can't say, but that's like worldly people. That's Christians.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's probably
not
the majority.
All of them, but I mean most people. Might be slightly off, but it's the same.
Yeah, well, just Christians are like the largest religion. Christianity is the largest religion. So obviously. Yeah,
so that's includes them. Yeah.
So I think like that's what I'm wondering. Like it when. When you say that, what is that like for somebody? Like what? That's my question. Going back to it, it's like I think in that moment, man, I bet you guys put on such a great presentation. It's really awesome. You can get really excited. Is it working? A 16-year-old takes that commitment, but when they're 24, are they still thinking about that silver ring thing?
Right. Well, I can tell you, I can only tell you from our own experience. You know, I equate it as I look in when Jesus kind of gives a parable of the soils, and he basically, you know, the seed is the gospel. It's what he's sending out there. It's the truth. And I look at it in the same way, is that, hey, when we're throwing this message out, I know it's the right message. I don't think anyone's going to deny it, that this is what is right. Now, right. It's the practicality of living out that makes the difference. And so there's four responses. Some people don't take it. And the next three do. And I say what we see in our event, I think we see within our event some people that no matter what you say, they're not going to believe you. They're going to go on doing whatever they want to do. And that's fine. There's the next three that are going to initially, you know, they're going to respond positively. But two out of those three, it's not very deep. You know, one's going to fall away because of temptation and some pressures. Someone's going to fall away from just the, you know, just the inability. There's no root. There's no depth. But it says with the one that falls on fertile soil, that's the one that produces that harvest. And I've seen, I mean, I got a girl on our team right now sharing her story. This girl, she's 22, 23 years old, just got married in June. She came to an event, first event, 5 years ago when her dad had walked out as a crack addict. She had never been in a church, came to this event, gave her life to Christ at the event, committed to purity, joined our team 5 years later after walking that out. Met her husband on the road on our team when they got married in June. That girl now, her life, she's going out and sharing her testimony with thousands of people. So when I look at like that hundredfold, you know, thing, like her, the way this ministry and this message intersected her life 5 years ago, against all odds, she should have been sexually active. I mean, she was before that, but it changed her life radically. She's living it. So that's the hope that I have. Does that hope, you know, last for everyone? No. Do I hope that works with my own kids? Certainly. I got four kids too, from 6 years old down to 10 months. And I hope for every one of them, I'm going to keep the conversation. I'm not going to set the bar any
lower. Let's talk about a couple parenting things.
I think Joey's got a question.
Yeah, let me ask this real quick just before we move on. I'm with you for sure, more than skeptical. But I guess the thing that keeps coming in my mind is at one point you said, I think calling them to, I don't know if you said one of the highest callings or what. what do you think about 2.5 hours of just the purity of the gospel and like how great Jesus is and how deadly sin is and how more powerful Jesus is than sin, and you know how the world is defined, you know, by God and Jesus coming. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. It just seems like the focus is one sin. Where does that leave someone with the gospel and all that?
Yeah, well, I mean, within our event, we present the gospel is kind of the culmination to everything that we present. I mean, we basically, you know, we wrap up everything kind of encompassing that, hey, this is just one sin, but there's all sin that separates us from God, and that, you know, and give the whole story of the cross and Christ and redemption. And again, that empowerment of the Holy Spirit that teaches us to say no to ungodliness, however it's presented. Again, what we have seen is that for this message, like, sexuality is so big in our culture. And so this has been for us just ripe soil to present the gospel, because yeah. virtually every kid in the mm-hmm. audience is dealing with it. Yeah. And so when we present the gospel at our events, the response to it is extraordinary, because whether you're dealing with pornography or you're sleeping with a boyfriend, a girlfriend, or you get baggage from the pet, whatever it is, you're bringing in image-related, sexual-related, all this stuff, because it's so core kind of to who we are. Again, going back to that uniqueness of when it says that there is no sin like sexual sin. So I think we focus in on it only because of the unique nature it has to harm you more than anything else. Not because it's worse than something else, not because it separates you from God more than something else, but it's the sin. It says that he who sins sexually sins against himself. So you mm-hmm. you take in shame and guilt. I mean, why is it that when we go and we get married, it's like it's pretty easy to confess our past, whether it's drugs or alcohol or things like that, but most people hide aspects of their sexual uh-huh. history with their future spouse, because there's a unique
yeah, Jason,
damning to it.
This is a yeah, you're I mean, I'm really loving what you're saying, enjoying talking to you more than I even thought I would. Now, what I really appreciate is your both ability and desire to tie this stuff back into Scripture and the gospel. And I hear that loud and
yeah,
clear.
Definitely. Yeah.
Like, you do a lot more and a lot better than I do. So I don't hear you saying we got to protect them. We just want the parents to feel like they're safe and it's good. You got to do good. Like, right. You know what I mean? So on one level, on the surface level, it could sound like you're just saying, hey, be more moral, don't do bad stuff. Here's a program parents can drop their kids off up at, they can feel good. But that's not what I hear coming from right. your mouth and from your heart. So I really appreciate that. And my question, just because where I am in life, is definitely centered around parenting. So one thing it does bring up to me that, man, the fact that this program works so well and does this probably does point to the fact that there's a bunch of parents who do want somebody else to hammer the message into their kid. Like, that's definitely a problem in our culture as a whole, and we probably need more parental involvement, and that's what I'm most concerned about. I wonder, and what's your opinion of this, anybody who has a kid older than me, which all of y'all do, is the right strategy to put the gravity of sex so high that they don't ever do it? Or would it be the wrong approach to say, listen, of course, I don't believe this. This is what the gospel says. This is what the Bible says. All the stuff that Jason says. However, if you do have sex, you can just tell me. It's totally fine. It's okay. I won't be mad.
Right.
Is that a good way to put it? And if you need condoms, please use them. I'll give them to you. I mean, how far does that go? I'm serious.
Well, yeah.
Like,
I think
Toby's parents were like, no matter what, don't do it ever. You know, people do that a lot. And then you just can't tell them. So I'm really interested in exploring that line of what is either encouraging or enabling or stopping. I wonder what y'all three think about that.
Just a side note. I mean, my parents totally did the, hey, if you drink, you will die. If you have sex, you will immediately have AIDS and a baby. I mean, it was the most condemnation
ever.
Work,
though.
Yeah, it
we
didn't
know that
work.
Bluff doesn't
I was
work.
Like, oh, I mean, there's lots of people that are doing it.
So would you tell your daughter, look, I really think, if you had to have sex or not, I'm going to go with not. But if you do, that's totally cool. Like, you wouldn't say that either. So right. what would you say?
I think I hope that my wife and I have an open conversation with all of our kids that they experience any mistake that they make through a lens of grace and forgiveness, so that they know no matter what they've done, I want to be there. You know, every study and every survey will show you that no matter what we think, parents are still the leading influence when it comes to their child's sexual decision making. So the problem is too many parents don't really set their expectations. Or they do have one 10-minute conversation tricking their kid when they said they were going to go play tennis and they go do something else and talk about the 10-minute sex talk, get it off our back, and wipe our hands clean with it. You know, so our ministry, even Silver Anything, is just one piece of a puzzle, hopefully, that parents will employ to, you know, create an expectation and a kind of framework around their kids that they see. You know, I want my kids to hang around with all the kids that are on our team. I want my kids to be around parents who've lived this before them and can see the value and the benefit and what it meant for their marriage. I want them to look at it from a positive standpoint, not from a don't have sex, don't get pregnant. When it comes to
you're 16 years old. I don't want you to have sex, but if you do, you can tell your mother and I.
Yeah, if you're 16 years old, if you do it,
is that what you would say?
Yeah, I would say if you do it, I want you to come to me because I don't think it's the right thing. I don't think it's the best thing for your life, and I think it can be devastating to your life. But I'm not going to condemn you for it. I know the pressures and all the temptations that are in the world, and I want to help you to make the best choices. Odds are my kid is not going to come to me, especially if that you do you know that. Especially amongst Christian kids who've heard the right message, the significant levels of guilt and shame that first time. It's like there's an excitement to it, but then after that, there's that conviction. And so hopefully I've seen so many times where that's happened, where students have come to their parents and after that, if they've had that open communication, and it's not like I've done it and I want to keep doing it. It's, oh my gosh, I did it. It wasn't all it was cracked up to be. You were right. How can I now, you know, start to live differently? So, and I would say, you know, we got to ask the question, you mentioned even the idea of condoms. And I would say I'm going to fight forever with my kid to, even if they tell me they're going to have sex, I'm going to fight to keep pointing them to the picture of that's not what the gospel is. That's not what Christ is calling us to. That's not the life that is going to, you know, bring you the future that you hope in marriage. And so I'm not ever going to tell them, go ahead and do that. Because as soon as I've done, I've caved into that. And my question back to people often is, so what's the worst thing?
So no condoms.
Yeah, because what's the worst thing? What are we doing with a condom? We're just trying to prevent pregnancy, right? So we're preventing pregnancy at the risk of then having our kid become prolifically sexually active. Because with condom, you know, frequency comes more frequency. So they have sex with more people and more often. And so what you're doing to your emotion and to your soul, to who you are, again, sinning against yourself. Sometimes I've seen to where a baby is the best thing that could happen. A baby is what called someone back to responsibility and maturity in the relationship with Christ. All we're doing with the condom is trying to quiet that down. And
the enemy here? That's my next question. Who's the enemy? Is it? I'll give you a few suggestions. Is it Planned Parenthood? Is it the public health system and the education that teaches sex ed and gives out condoms? Is it just the devil? I mean,
is it
what is
people?
The, is it TV and movies?
Yeah,
who's the enemy?
I mean, culture is just it's a loose way of saying it's Satan. I mean, Satan is the one who's, you know, prowling, seeking to kill and destroy both our lives presently, our lives future, seeking to destroy the image of God, seeking to destroy that oneness. I mean, when it says that the two shall become one flesh, and now we're trying to take what God created in marriage and the beauty that can be, and just casually say it's just physical. So I would say that there are several agents in that, which could be the Planned Parenthood, public school system, culture in general, pop culture. But ultimately, it's Satan trying to use all the different tools to destroy what God intended to be something that's great. I mean, that's what we used to, and you know, maybe you heard this in the event years ago, we yell out from the very beginning, sex is great. It's an awesome thing. It's created for a right context. Out of that context, it can be destructive.
Okay. With that being said, I do think you fight for it and you say, okay, I like that stance. Hey, no matter what, this is what I believe. So I'm going to stand that way. I'm not going to give my kids condoms and just expect, like you said, lower the bar. But at the same time, I wonder, like, when you said like guilt and shame that people feel, like, is that just in Christians? Like, I feel like a lot of non-Christians, especially people I've been around, they don't ever feel that necessarily bad. And whenever I hear something negative about sex outside of marriage, it's usually from a Christian standpoint of, oh man, I feel bad for that person. So that's why it feels like sometimes it's unrealistic, because what are the bad things about having sex outside of marriage? I, like we said, you could get pregnant, you could get a disease, but everybody, that's across the board for anybody. I mean, you know, that's regardless of what you believe, those are the two potential things that could happen from having sex. But what is like really bad? Like if there's a 17-year-old, two 17-year-olds, and they're having sex and then they break up and no kid or no disease, what are you saying that they're carrying that's going to, is like so detrimental?
I would say the only thing that's going to be, you know, as as science has caught up with the scripture wrote more than 2,000 years ago, is that we're understanding now brain chemistry and even the bonding effect of sex related to chemicals within our own body. You know, so that idea literally of like the two shall become one, I would say for anyone that if you're in a sexual relationship as a teenager and then you break that up and then you get involved in another one, you break that up. What happens, you have chemicals in you. It's the same thing that happens with pornography. You have chemicals in your body. For girls, it's the oxytocin. For guys, it's vasopressin that literally bond you to one another. It's what's supposed to make the marriage covenant so strong. And so you keep doing that. You engage in sex. You get there, you break up. Get there, break up, get there. Later on, you find the one, the person you want to spend your life with, and then you can't make it stick. They can't. Well, most often, I think, and they link divorce rates and things like that to sexual activity before then. So that's one thing. But overall, I mean, reality is, like you just said, I mean, if it comes down to, I believe this is right because I believe when it says that, do you know your body is not your own, you're bought at a price, therefore glorify God in your body. As a Christian, I believe this is what God calls myself and all of us to because of what he did at the cross. So I have an obligation to glorify him with it. If I didn't believe that, I'd probably believe in the eat, drink, and be merry, tomorrow we die. Screw it. Who cares? You know, because if the worst thing I have to worry about is, you know, an STD that maybe can get masked by, you know, medication or a baby that I can, you know, take care of, then yeah, outside of that, it just depends on what you want for your future. I would say if you want a long-term committed marriage somewhere down the line, you're going to screw that up most likely the more sexually active you are prior to it.
And I like what Matt was saying too. I do think this is a parent thing. I wanted to ask you about that, like the parent involvement in there, because one thing that's interesting, having talked about this, like in telling you, you know, like my parents' stance on sex, like it is wrong. Do not do it till you get, just don't. But they had the exact opposite reaction to me cleaning my plate. And so I got big and fat. I mean, I really did. Like I got huge, and it wasn't like at all an issue. They didn't care. You know, like I mean, and that did health-wise, emotionally, physically, it did terrible things to me, like a whole opposite spectrum, I guess, as far as, I mean, it's still a body issue, I suppose. But
yeah, at least when you have sex, the kids think you're cool. You got picked on.
Yeah, I know. I know. My parents took the right. I wish they would have said, don't overeat. At least it would have probably been, it's pretty close to enjoy as much. A good meal is pretty good. But yeah, what about parent involvement? Like, do you see that? Like, are these kids, are your kids mostly Christian when they come to these things? Is there a ton of atheists or agnostics that are coming to these things? Or is this like kids that are feeling repressed and don't want to tell anybody about the sex because they're Christians?
Yeah, it depends on the events that we do. And some of the locations that we go, we'll try to do some school assemblies, stuff like that ahead of time. We see a lot more non-Christians show up just because our team really breaks the mold when it comes to stereotypes. You know, the stereotype that most people have of a abstinence group or things like that is it's going to be some middle-aged person up there just saying don't have sex. But our team is a bunch of cool young people that are authentically living it out. And when we go into a school and we'll do assemblies, we meet some of these kids and we hang out with them, we talk with them, they see, wow, you're not as weird and from some other planet like we thought. Maybe we'll come and listen to more of what you want to say. And at those events, response to the gospel like even goes through the roof. But majority, I would say, yeah, reality is that a majority of our marketing and outreach goes directly to the church and to youth leaders and communities and churches, trying to get them. Because if we as the church and those within the church aren't first living this out, then how's anyone else going to do it? You know, if we're not being that example to others, it's going to be very difficult for other people to just want to jump in. No one's out there saying, hey, sign me up for the no sex thing. You know, that's not the natural thing in our bodies and our lives. You know, it's part of that. You know, and the verse on our ring, it's part of that when it says, you know, that God calls you to sanctification, to be set apart, avoid sexual immorality, and you learn to control your body. It's not natural. Our sinful nature and just part of who, even how God created us, is to relationships should go in that direction. So,
yeah, I love that answer because I really appreciate that. And I even think we kind of, I love when we focus in on Christian culture and we say, I mean, because you can start with, hey, you know the Bible, you're calling yourself a Christian. So, yeah. You know what I mean? You can start there, which makes it a lot easier because not only a non-Christian would go, well, I mean, there's no precedent for this. I don't believe in the Bible. So what are you telling me? You know, I mean, you know, who are you? But starting with Christians, I think that is the way to go because I do think this is an important issue in that, I mean, in so many ways, but in one big issue is just, honestly, for me, I get so tired of Christianity looking so hypocritical with, yeah, we'll have sex outside of marriage and that's not a big deal. But if you're gay and you're doing that sexual sin, it's a really big deal.
Yeah.
But my sexual sin isn't that big of a deal. You know, yeah, my girlfriend, you know, like I've known a Christian family where they had two sons and one was gay and the other son was having unbelievable sex outside of marriage. And the family loved the son that was having heterosexual sex and totally disowned the son that was having gay sex. And I was like, wait a minute.
Because
but, I
mean,
those are both sexual sins.
Right.
So
right.
I really do appreciate that, like facing that culture, because you go, "What? Hold on, I gotta face up to this too. I'm sexually sinning. So so let me start there. Let me start with me. Let me figure out this plank in my eye, and then we can kind of go from there. But so I really do appreciate that. Next thing I was going to ask you too, and I don't know what you guys' stance on this, but what is the stance for Silver Ring Thing or you guys for masturbation? Like, if you're not going to have sex, are you guys like, well, you can handle it this way or just stay away? Don't get near your genitals. Is that what is your stance?
Yeah, we don't even, from the stage, talking to middle school, high school students in that context, we don't even really address it within our event. We do, I mean, we would say that mutual masturbation, you know, so you taking care of a girlfriend or she taking care of you, that's out of question. I mean, that's touching someone's private areas. If it's touching an area that the bathing suit covers, it should be off limits. And in the same way, because the culmination of that creates that same bonding effect. So you're still creating that. Now within, you at home alone, we don't really take issue with that. I think Dr. Dobson years ago basically said it's not a hill to die on, because 99% of guys have done it and the other 1% are lying. So what's the point? We don't really take it up. If I talk to someone individually, it does come down to spiritually the question of what are you thinking about when you're doing it? Because if you look lustfully upon someone, you've committed adultery. So I guess practically speaking, if you could do it and not think of someone, there really wouldn't be anything wrong with it. But
I agree, man.
What are you focusing on when you're doing it? And the only issue we've talked to parents about too is really at the place where you get to talk to your kids is when it becomes a consuming behavior. When you know it's happening and you know it's happening for however you've discovered that a lot. So when kids are planning schedules around when they can be home and this and that. And the other time, most masturbation today is linked to pornography. And I think the dangers of that are becoming very, very evident.
When you say that people, you know, can masturbate if they don't think lustful thoughts, I mean, in college, people tease me, but I pulled it off. No pun intended.
Oh, my Lord. Come on. What's funny to me is I guarantee you most, like, non-Christians go, so you're telling me I'm masturbating to do something sexually and then don't think anything sexually?
Here's the thing though, is I remember like having a migraine in my dorm room and I'm like, man, masturbating would really help me right now. So I'm masturbating and then with all my might, I'm like, don't think of anything. And it's like intense. It's like, I'm not going to think of anything. I'm just going to get through and not think of anything.
Well, part of the problem too is that we're trained just like that. There's pornography so early, sex is so early that you have thoughts in your head.
Right.
So you start with the thoughts and then you act on those with the masturbate. It's not like, hey, I feel something. I'm going to, whatever you want to call it, I'm gonna masturbate or relieve myself or whatever. You start with the bad thought or the lustful thought, I should say, and then you go there.
But I think the whole masturbation topic, and Jason, when I read Dobson's words on it, I was surprised with how quote unquote liberal he was with it, but it just resonated with me completely because I think if you take the masturbation issue and you try to make a hard sell for that being a sin too, you are just setting kids up to feel guilty and ashamed and just defeated completely. I mean, I want to have open conversations, with my boys about masturbation specifically, because that's something that I can relate to growing up, and say the same thing. Look, you really should try not to lust, but hey, if you could figure out how to masturbate without lust, please do so. You know, I mean.
Okay, so that brings up some technical stuff for me. Y'all got me interested now. So
all right. Finally.
Yeah, Matt's never interested.
Yeah, so you're saying masturbation in that way, okay, and then what you talked about mutual masturbation, intercourse. So let's go down the line here on just your stance. Now, I know you don't aren't the be-all, end-all for it, but
he is, actually.
Sexual
he
intercourse.
Is. Look him up.
Yeah, the sexpert, right?
The sexpert. Yeah. Today joining us is Jason the sexpert.
My wife will kill me if she thinks that's my title.
Yeah, that is hilarious. That's exactly
she
what a
guy...
She
can tell you how true that isn't, by the way.
That's exactly what every guy tells his wife. Hey, I am a sexpert. Baby. If I told my wife that, she'd laugh me out of the room. Go ahead, Matt.
So intercourse, no, right?
No.
Okay, blowjobs and hand jobs.
No.
Is that okay? And are those? Are you still a virgin if you do those things? Because you know, in Christian culture, we have this crazy amount of mental gymnastics people do. So I'm going to make it kind of plain and out loud here. So, blowjobs and hand jobs. Are you still a virgin? Is that a no? Can you do that?
I don't know how you really define virginity in the culture, because I don't define virginity as something physical, but something mental, you know, because if you are, let's say you get raped, like legitimately, you're walking down the street, some guy jumps out of the bushes and a girl gets raped, you know, spiritually, like emotionally, she's a virgin because she didn't give anything away. Your virginity can't be taken from you. It can be given.
Yeah.
And so, but physically, she may have contracted something. She may get pregnant. She may have an STD. So physically, she's no longer a virgin. So if we're talking from a spiritual, from a physical standpoint, virginity has been defined by penetration, intercourse. So yeah, blowjob, handjob, no. But spiritually, I think that once you have, you know, gotten yourself to that level, I would say the purity in your life, your virginity is certainly in jeopardy, because you're now fulfilling someone in a way that you should really only do within the context of marriage.
Well, that's the biggest thing I've seen in my realm, and I'll just be honest, in my life, for me, it was, well, I didn't penetrate, but I cannot, I mean, I can give you a million more sexual terms that I engaged in that weren't vaginal penetration.
Yeah. Well, so, like, yeah, and the, I would say like Christian dry humping, that's right. Like a huge one.
Yeah, you know, I mean, right? Everything.
So, but I think that's what you're saying, right?
Do you call it Christian dry humping?
Well, no, Christian's that dry hump. I mean, which is, for people that don't know, that's just, you know, I guess everybody knows what that is. Yeah. I don't have to define it. But Jason, you're still saying, like, this is what I like clarifying this for, is the problem is you're not penetrating, but you are doing something mentally that is very sexual, and you're trying to do that only for the sexual gratification, right?
Right.
So that wouldn't be good.
Person.
It's right. Not good to, even though you don't break the rules, it's like that, it's that idea of Christians going, yo, God, you know, God said, don't have sex outside marriage. We're not, I'm not penetrating you. You know, I'm not doing anything. We're just here heavily petting each other. And, but the intent is still the same. So you're not really breaking, you know, you're not getting around the real thing. You're really,
and you're using your non-spouse as an object.
Right. Totally. Totally, totally, totally.
That's like the Jewish people observe the Sabbath, so they pay other people to do stuff for them, so they didn't technically break the law on Sunday or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? So also, in keeping with that, like I'm saying, that's what I think I and a bunch of other people I know, that's what we've been really guilty of, is just spinning it to ourselves. So if we're going to be honest about these things in this way, are we also telling our kids, hey, son, you're 15 now. I did sexual acts with 16 women before your mother, just so you know. And I hope you don't. Is that, are we there?
In conversation with your kids, I think you have to introduce things to your kids at an appropriate time. And I think it's going to be different for each parent, depending on, I think, the relationship with their child and where their kid is at. You know, I'm not saying that you have to divulge your whole sexual past. I don't think it's necessary that you do, because someone told me once that if you tell kids what not to do because you're doing it, while you're doing it, and you're a hypocrite. But if you tell your kids what not to do because you did it, you're a parent. So I think if I'm you know, doing something that I'm telling my kids that they shouldn't do while I'm doing it outside of the marriage context, then, you know, I'm being a hypocrite about it. But I don't think that, you know, it all depends on the age context. I think it depends on that relationship to know how much you want to divulge. I don't think that probably until a college age or later would I probably divulge information to my kids about my own past. But then again, mm-hmm. It could be an opportunity, because I can share in our relationship the difference between my wife and I coming into it, where she was a virgin, I was not, and why I desire that for them is because I know some of the challenges, honestly, that it even presents in our marriage today, you know, just relation of just trust, of feeling like that she, you know, saved herself for something to be so unique, and she, you know, there could be moments where she feels like, am I still comparing her to somebody else? Do I... you know, desire something from her because I received it somewhere else, you know. And so I don't want my kids to have that. I would love for them to have everything, to know that, like, man, this is just unique to the two of us, and it's awesome because we have nothing to compare it to. So I think there's probably a context to where we'll have that conversation, but it may be different with my sons as it is with my daughter. You never know.
For sure. Yeah, that one last thing, too, I wanted to talk to you about. I guess probably, and we haven't talked about this, but I'm sure one of the biggest things, and I don't know if this is a calling of you guys, but I'm sure this happens at every show you guys do, every event that you guys do. We haven't even talked about that much going into these kids. There's probably an unbelievable amount that were molested or sexually abused, and you have to start there. Like, right? Like, I mean, is that happening a lot? Are people coming up and being like, yeah, I was raped or I was molested or whatever? Are you guys coming across that much where people are starting with sex where it was forced upon them?
Yeah, we get a lot of that, and a lot of the people come up, especially the team members that'll share, you know, their own stories from the stage, some of which may have abuse in the past or rape or different things like that. And so there's a lot of the baggage that teens kind of carry forward and be able to. And the biggest thing is really not hearing this message and not realizing that no matter what's been done to you, like some people actually think that somehow it was their fault, you know, that when a father or an uncle or someone like that abused them. I mean, we had a girl last year who approached us right after the event up in Oregon, whose father was actually a pastor of a church, and her oldest brother started, you know, molesting her when they were very young. Then the second brother started, they both did it, not knowing that the other one was even doing it. This girl was getting abused by her two older brothers sexually, and she didn't know. She was contacting us saying, how do I handle this? Because I don't know how to have a normal relationship with guys now. I don't know how to not look at them like kind of scornfully or sinfully or not even look at them sexually because of my own past. So yeah, we got to work through a lot of that stuff. In many cases, we got to, you know, we'll try to refer people to different counseling and local crisis pregnancy centers or local churches. But I mean, the level of perversion, I think that the kids have experienced, and the level of abuse that is, it's staggering and it's saddening. You know, it really is. It breaks your heart to hear some of the stories that we come in contact with every day.
Man, I just hate hearing that. Yeah. It's just like the weakest people on earth. You know, adults, you know, as soon as you get old enough, you start abusing somebody that's younger and weaker than you. Yeah. And it's just like that. That's not going away either. So I agree. I mean, this is needed. I assumed that was going to be the case, and it just breaks my heart to hear that there's just people out there that I bet you, and you probably could attest to this, that there are people that come and go, oh, it's just a church event, I'll go to it. Yeah, you know, no big deal. And then hear some of the stories from stage, and then just like, oh, that's me. I gotta tell somebody about that. That, I love hearing that. Not that the sin was on them, but that they don't feel alone, and they go, oh, wait. Like you said, I mean, how horrible is that? If you're a young lady and you go, well, my own brothers who are supposed to love me treated me this way, so this is what love is. Yeah, men use you, and now I see men this way.
Yeah,
and like, how? I mean, that has to be so confusing and hurtful. And then you're right. She has tons of shame that was placed upon her. And I think that's one of the biggest things that Satan uses is shame. I mean, you know, guilt.
Yeah. Not, I mean, even with the people that are 16 and popular and hot that just decided to have sex, they still have shame. And then that affects them. And there's a reason why they got where they are. So you have two main things that go on that intersect here. And that is, one, if you understood everybody's backstory, like the abused person or the person seeking attention or trying to have sex to be popular, then you actually would understand how and why they were like that, first of all, so you wouldn't just label them as bad.
Right.
And then on the other hand, the perversion part, the people that prey on people, I'm telling you, it's not that different. It's just a more extreme version of the 17-year-old boy like me trying to dry hump a girl because I wanted to. That's twisted. That's using another person as an object for your gratification that you don't care about. Now, a pedophile, 25-year-old and a 5-year-old, yeah, way worse. Way worse example of the same thing. So those two things intersecting, it's crazy what can happen. But the biggest thing to me is Christian culture has been so good for so long at telling people what not to do and what we've done poorly. And it sounds like you guys are doing a good job of this. And that's what I appreciate, is letting people know that they can say what they have done, that they need to do that, that the shame. I mean, we haven't done good at understanding people that have done bad things that we see as bad, but we've done a great job of telling them why it's bad. So that's the progress I think we're making in Christianity as a whole, is making it more okay for more people to be honest. So if you guys are doing that, then kudos to you very much. We appreciate that work being done.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to, I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to do. Just be honest about your own past, about where you're going, and about the present struggle. Like I said, that's why we try to be, we don't try to set the standard from stage to say that, hey, if you're not perfect, if you're not a virgin, walk out the back. We don't want you here. And if you're not going to be that, you know, you have no place here. We're basically saying, hey, do you just, do you agree that this is, based on what you've heard here today, that this is the best plan for your life? And you're going to go out there and fight the fight. Whatever that looks like, it's going to be different for every person. But as long as, I think, again, it's an expression, you know, the idea of purity is a fruit of the spirit. It's self-control, okay? And so for us to control our own self to say, this is what I will do, this is what I won't do through the power of the Holy Spirit, that's what really purity is. And so as we challenge kids to go out there and do that, it's gonna be a fight. And one of the things that I think has been so powerful, and I share this with people all the time, which I think is really lacking in a lot of the culture today, is just I'm struck by how many times Paul, the Apostle Paul, basically, you know, challenges the church and the believers, and he basically says, "Hey, imitate me as I imitate Christ. Follow me as I follow Christ." And all he's basically saying is, "I'm a role model. I'm a poor example of Christ, but I'm still the best one you're going to find around here." And what I see in our team is what I admire, because I'm 36 years old. Our team is mainly 18 to 23, living this out, not without struggle, not sometimes without failure, but as best they can, trying to live out the gospel, live out what Christ is calling them to do in their lives, and basically saying, hey, I'm going to put my life on display. So if you start to imitate me to some degree, you're going to start to, you know, walk a little bit closer to Christ. And we don't have enough of that. We don't have enough people being willing to say, I'm standing up in the struggle, I'm going to live this out. I mean, sometimes it's tough enough just to say you're a Christian in today's culture, but then to say you're the Christian that's not having sex, you're like a whole different new kind of animal, some kind of weird Aborigine Christian, you know, that people think is so weird. And so, but we need more people just basically saying, I'm not going to be perfect, but I'm going to try. And I'm going to try it through the power of the Holy Spirit, because I want the best in my future wife, husband, and marriage that I can possibly have.
And talking about that future, so here's the other thing too that I think, what do we do for people? Because we go, okay, wait till you're married, and then there's going to be beautiful sex, and then sex. I feel like we drop the ball too on, hey, when you first have sex for the first time, it's not like amazing. It's not like, you know, Jennifer Lopez and Matthew McConaughey. You know, you're ripped, you're perfectly perspiring. There's awesome music, and everybody is super happy at the end. It's not like that. You know what I mean? It's like a couple seconds, and everybody's like, oh. you know what
and
I mean?
Your wife is like, yeah. Oh,
so,
that's it?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, how do we teach people, like, hey.
That was your wife, by the way.
No, trust me, it was exact opposite, mister. But I do think, like, we need to tell people the reality of sex as well. Like, hey, listen, it's going to be awesome, and it will be better if you two are the only people that ever do this and share this with each other and learn. You know, like, I think people think, oh, well, I waited this long, man, I'm going to get mine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is about me right now. I kind of thought that.
Yeah.
I remember telling Jess before we got married, seriously, I said this. I was like, listen, you know, we're going to have sex all the time, right? And she was really, really nice and kind and gracious to me and through all that stuff. But, I mean, the truth is, like, I mean, it's not just easy. Like, if you wait, it's not like I think there should – everybody should not set these huge expectations either of, well, if you wait till marriage, then sex will be unreal. I mean, maybe for some people it is, but I would say majority is still going to be awkward and weird and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's uncomfortable to be naked around somebody, you know, with your shirt off sometimes or whatever. I mean, just that alone is a huge step. So, and then going on to actually have sex is huge. So I do think we should tell people more the reality of sex too, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I think we should prepare them more too. I mean, I remember when before we got married, a couple who had been married just a couple years before us got us a book, and I think it was called The Act of Marriage by I think it was Tim and Beverly LaHaye, and it was basically all about literally like, how does this thing work? What are the different body parts? How do you do this? How do you do that? I mean, it was literally like a textbook written from a biblical perspective, but by two Christians, but really, this is how sex kind of works. This is what you can discover about one another. And you got some tips and pointers in there. You're like, oh, that sounds pretty good. And so I think, yeah, I mean, you got, on the one hand, you get all these people, they hear no, 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 no. And all of a sudden one night it's yes. And you feel a little bit like, how do I do this? And I think a lot of things, even a lot of girls struggle with that too, especially Christians who do make this kind of commitment, like a commitment to abstain and hear no for so long, and then one night just can flip a switch and say yes. And that's not easy. So I think that's part of what we need to communicate and even prepare people for. And I think those who've gone before us, it's a benefit. I try to do that with people I know getting married. Say, just set that expectation. Hey, it's something that's going to grow. It's going to build that intimacy. You know, it's going to take you some time, and over time, it just gets better. And the truth is that, you know, committed Christian couples report the most satisfying sex later in marriage, years down the road. Mm-hmm. So, well, you know,
that's great.
That's funny. Like the Tim LaHaye book. Did he have like names for his moves, like his sexual moves, like the apocalypse?
Diagrams.
This move is the Armageddon. This was the Left Behind. And this is the series, baby.
The pre-trib position.
I think I'm not sure if I got the right name. I know the book's called The Act of Marriage.
Well, Jason, your website is silverringthing.com, correct?
Correct. That's correct. Yep.
All right. Is there anything you want to announce or you say you have got coming up? Is there anything you ask people to do?
How do churches website? Get in touch with you to bring you guys? In fact, I want to say this, that you guys are coming next Wednesday night to Seacoast, which is the church Toby and I work at. And it's going to be a big event for all of our students in the Charleston area. So
yeah, that's
we're
how
excited
we heard,
about
how
that.
We heard about
are you going to be in Charleston Wednesday? Are you?
I don't even have my travel scheduled yet for this weekend, so I'm not sure. It usually is either myself or our founder and president, Denny Patton, who'll go down there. So, but yeah, I would encourage people just go to our site, you know, check it out. There's a schedule, you know, we've got the rest of our events here for this spring. We do about 80 events a year, and we do we're not a ministry that just picks a bunch of locations, schedule it, and then says, come see us. I consider us much more responsive. So when people in a community say, we want to partner with you, we have a passion, we have a desire to communicate this message, we want to bring you in. That's how most of our events happen. So people contact us. We have like an online booking form. We get contact info on there. People can contact me directly. But, you know, we love to partner with people who have the passion, who feel like, you know what, I want to do something about it, and, you know, try to respond to that and come to them.
Sweet.
Well, Jason, thank you for coming on
it was really
the podcast
awesome.
And sharing your opinions and tying them to Scripture. We really appreciate the point of view.
Awesome, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this was great, man. I really appreciate your honesty and openness, and you didn't really shy away from anything. So I actually really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank definitely. You.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Jason.
Well, I appreciate you guys. I like what you're doing. I became a new listener once I first got contacted, listening to some of you doing, and I think it's awesome be honest, you know, I mean, and that's why I was telling Nick in some of our emails, like, listen, we're not going to be afraid to go to the core of what we believe and what's true, you know, and because it doesn't do anyone any good. So I was listening to ones you guys are doing even about with the Reform Pubcast guys and the alcohol. Yeah. And, you know, it's just, you know, I think we got to stop hiding behind religion and just get to what it really means to follow Christ. So,
I agree, man. Well, thanks for joining us, dude.
Yeah, man, it was a pleasure.
Hopefully, if you're around, maybe we can stop by and meet you in person if you come down to Charleston. So
sounds great.
All right, see you, man.
All right, guys.
Appreciate
take it easy.
Bye-bye.
All right, man, Jason, that was pretty good.
That was
good. I really enjoyed that interview. That was probably a lot more awesome than I thought it would be even. I didn't know if he would be uncomfortable when we brought up stuff like masturbation.
Right.
You know what I mean? I thought, you know, because a lot of times we bring up the word masturbation even around Christians. They go, and they don't like talking about it. He's just a straight shooter, man.
Yeah, definitely.
No pun intended, but I mean, he really is a good dude. I mean, I don't know where I stand on how long or how much it works to be in front of a teenager saying don't have sex, because as we all know, sex feels awesome. That's why everybody likes doing it. So it's hard to say, hey, this feels awesome, you're going to love it. I even did it, just don't do it. That's really hard to say.
Well,
I did it, but don't you dare do it.
Right. I'll say this, like we did this interview a little while ago. It's one of those unique situations to where we're bringing. So I've actually been to a Silver Ring Thing event since doing this interview, and I have to say that I am completely on board. A lot of the pushback and criticisms that the three of us presented to Jason, I think we are all on board with them, and our concerns and our doubts with whether or not that's a good angle to take. And I feel like after having gone to the Silver Ring Thing,
What
all
was
of,
it?
All of my concerns are
yeah, tell us about it.
Tell alleviated. Us about it.
Well, first of all, they really did do a great job appealing to students, and I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with that. I think if that's the only way you set out to do stuff, then that'd be a problem. But Seacoast, our church, for example, they're mainly into small groups when it comes to students. This is the complete opposite of small groups because you're in a big room, lots of music. One of the guys in the Silver Ring thing actually did hip hop. So there's lights, there's skits, there's crazy awesome graphics. So it's very appealing. And as crazy as it sounds, they definitely pulled off presenting Christianity in a way that's cool for even non-Christians at that age. So in other words, it didn't come across where if you're not a Christian, you come there and you're just, oh, this is so lame. I'm pretty sure everybody's just like, yeah, I may not like the Christianity thing, but these guys are pretty cool. What I was mainly impressed with, though, is it, even though it's a Silver Ring thing and most of the subject was about sex and not doing it, they addressed all the stuff such as a lot of you have already had sex. That doesn't mean that you're doomed. A lot of you are probably going to have sex after having gone through the Silver Ring thing. That doesn't mean that life is over for you. And then the main message at the end, you would think, okay, so we're sending you out with these rings. Don't have sex. The main message at the end was the gospel and how Jesus is bigger than all of our sins. The main question at the end was whether or not kids want to commit their lives to Christ. So I just feel like, sure, they are focusing on a particular subject matter, and you could argue whether or not that's right or wrong to do so, but they're definitely doing a hell of a job doing it.
Yeah, so. I suppose. I mean, should we have that for... I mean, I thought Jason was really legit, and I enjoyed his point of view on it, and I meant what I said during the interview that I think that he does a good job and is more gospel-based than I would have thought, really. But does that mean we should have organizations, specialty organizations, for just for every sin that go around to auditoriums everywhere?
Well, I think it's a
like
great
an overeaters.
I feel the same way, kind just of about like weird. Recovery groups. Honestly, like not necessarily, but I think a recovery group. Why can't some of that stuff just be dealt with in small groups? So. Me personally, I see a recovery group and a ministry like Celebrate Recovery as being a good thing that needs to exist because you have people that can focus in on one area. For us to say that sex doesn't cause extra havoc yep. on teenagers, I think honestly is pretty stupid on our parts. And I think that's maybe the angle that you guys come from and where I would even come from sometimes. But sex is a bigger issue than a lot of other sins in with high schoolers. I mean, I believe that it is. So a ministry that says, man, this is actually, this is a tough one. It's just like any organ, like the government of America, they're going to be like, oh crap, we're having a problem with this. We need to focus on this area. Yep. I don't see the problem.
Yeah, no, I guess so. I can see that totally.
I still don't know what I think.
Yeah, that's fine.
I just don't know. I mean, like...
Or I feel. I put it this way. I don't feel like I have the energy or resources to push further.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it'd be a great dialogue if you guys were able to come too. And I don't think that y'all being there would have made y'all just agree with everything.
Right.
But I do think it would have given you a perspective of, okay, be able to evaluate better.
Well, I think one thing too is I'm getting older and older, so I don't know if I know what younger people like. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like maybe I'm just totally wrong, and maybe the flashing lights and the cool rapper and the some somewhat transparent stories or whatever works. And if so, that's cool. To me, it seems mostly entertaining.
Right.
And then I believe fully that somebody will maybe make a commitment and hold to it, or maybe even several people. But I would think overall, it just kind of focuses on that sin, and you just say, oh, well, yeah, I got to – man, this must be really serious. You go to a thing and you're 15 years old and they go, whoa, sex outside of marriage is really serious. I got to really think about this. And then when you're 17, 2 years later, and you're like, oh my gosh, I have a boner and my girlfriend looks really hot and she's down to do something. Yeah, I don't care about that Silver Ring thing anymore. And so my point is, I don't know after you do that, because somebody's put in your mind how big of a deal it is. Like you said, it's a bigger deal for high school players and all that stuff. I mean, I think us saying that makes it way harder for anybody to even talk about it. You know what I mean? Like,
well, it shouldn't be. That,
no, no.
Their, but I, their but whole premise the is point. To talk about it.
No, but it makes it such a huge thing that when everybody at the end raises probably raised their hand and said, yeah, I'm committing, I'm getting the ring and all that stuff, then what happens 2 years later? Are you still ready to talk about it? I mean, it's way easier to raise your hand and say, I'm not going to have sex till marriage, and then you're in a living room and with your girlfriend and it's ready available and you're like, or boyfriend, and you're like, yeah, I don't care. I'm just, and after you do it, the next day you're sitting there looking at your silver ring. Are you going to go tell somebody?
Yeah.
Are you going to go tell?
Here's the irony in what you guys are saying is if you believe in the Bible, you can read a whole passage where Paul, all he's talking about is sex. If it was so bad to focus in on one sin for a particular purpose,
I think you're missing the point.
At the time, no, I'm not missing the point. If Paul takes a whole chapter to talk about sexual immorality, that means there is a time to focus in on one thing to talk about. I mean,
I think you're missing the point. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
What's your point then?
My point is, when your daughter Rosa is 15 years old and you take her to the silver ring thing and you let her experience that and she sees how big it is and how devastating it is and how huge it is for teenagers to have sex outside of marriage, when she's 17...
Which is not how it was presented.
It seems like they all tell stories about how they were having sex outside of marriage and it was really bad and that's why they stopped. Everybody there said having sex outside of marriage is bad, and probably including you. And it's awful. It's terrible. You shouldn't do it. It wrecks your life. It becomes
having
an addiction.
Having sex outside of marriage is bad.
Yeah, I agree with you. But what I'm saying is, when we build it up like that, I'm going to go to an event to realize how bad it is and why I don't need to do it and why I actually need to make a commitment not to do this.
Don't read those passages by Paul.
To make a commitment not to do this. Then when Rosa is 17 years old and her boyfriend have sex, the next morning she's not going to be like as open, I think, to say, yeah, you know what, I need to talk about this with Dad, because she's
going
to
keep her from reading.
She's
going to
say, I feel guilty and I shouldn't tell my dad because I made a promise I didn't keep it.
But see, there's responsibility on my part as a father.
You not hear what I'm saying?
I do hear what you're saying.
What am I saying?
You're basically saying
that making such a huge, I mean, you're totally fine with making it, like you said. Sex, I mean, there's tons of things going on with kids in high school, but sex is like the biggest one. That's what
I
you
didn't
said.
Say biggest.
You said one of the most important, one of the biggest issues that are facing teenagers today. And my whole point is, when you make it so big and so important, it gets way harder to talk about.
Right.
For sure. That's
so
why people don't talk about
Paul
masturbation
shouldn't have done it
either. Or porn or all that. That's not what I'm saying.
Oh, foolish Galatians. He should have just stopped talking about sex and just say, hey, you're struggling with sin. That's a double standard.
You're missing
I'm not
my point.
Missing your point.
Yeah, you're totally missing my point, because is that all Paul talked about?
No, it's That's, not.
What else is Silver
was
Ring?
Was it all what, Silver Ring talked about?
Yeah. Their whole
the
thing is abstinence.
And other sins.
Their whole thing is abstinence
you
and going
there.
To
there. You weren't there.
I just did a podcast interview with the guy where that's what we talked about, Joey.
What I'm. That's because
what
we
is Silver Ring thing?
What,
look at the definition of Silver Ring thing and tell me what it says on the internet. What is it about?
Did you go to the event? That was not what it
I
was
didn't,
all about.
The reason I didn't go to the events because I led small group that you skipped out on to go to Silver Ring thing. So you didn't. You went to go see the thing about not having sex, and I went to have a real conversation with people about all kinds of things.
Yeah,
like you're
I
saying.
Actually had a lot of conversations with parents of our students.
About so, what?
Huh?
What'd you have a conversation about parents with students about at Silver Ring thing?
Oh, all sorts of things.
Like what?
Life in general. Oh, I talked to one guy about his job, one lady about her kids.
Okay.
All sorts of things. So I was having community too.
Well, that's cool.
Your community was probably with people, and you probably yelling at them like you normally yeah. do at small group.
No, but Toby did say
Calvinism.
But Toby did say for Emory, we did get a lighting rig, and we are adding a DJ and rapper to Emory for the next album.
No,
to try to appeal to
this just shows where we differ sometimes with Pastor Joey. He skips out on the small group organic church to go to the big church event with the flashing lights and all this stuff, and it changed his life forever. And he loves
you're really actually being an asshole right now. It's kind of ridiculous.
I love that you're getting mad right now because I'm disagreeing with you.
If
you get mad at me disagreeing with you, I'm sorry.
It's not a disagreement.
That means you're the asshole, not me.
You're taking a low shot.
I'm disagreeing with you.
You're taking a low shot by saying I don't value community.
I'm making a joke. Do you know who I am? I'm in a business with you. We've been touring Australia for 2 weeks and I can't make a joke. Of course I know you like small groups better.
Okay.
I have to say that? At this point in our relationship, I have to tell you I know that you like small groups better than Silver Ring thing? Are you serious? You're being the asshole if I have to say that. Good Lord. I know you. You're in the small group with me. I'm really glad you joined the small group. You used to not be in it.
All right. Now it's Joey's turn to be an asshole. Cue the music.
I'm almost too mad to give the truth.
No, you can't be too mad for that.
in a world where Joey can make fun of me and make jokes all the time, but if I say a joke that he doesn't like small groups, he says I'm literally being an asshole. This is the saddest start to news ever in the world. I don't even know what to say. Sometimes I lose my mind on this podcast, which is good for me. It is very good for me. Y'all need some news?
Let's do it.
Our good friend Andy Nichols, who plays bass with Emery a bunch, is just entered into the room eating, what, was that an ice cream, Andy? All right, this comes from the Huffington Post. Drunk man drives stolen forklift 3 miles to retrieve crashed truck. Oh, this is awesome. And it's in Fairbanks, Alaska, which those Alaskan folks are wild up there, boy.
I'm pretty sure it's legal to drink and drive.
You can
Alaska.
Do anything in Alaska. I mean, you can kill somebody and you just take them out there and it doesn't matter. Police in Fairbanks, Alaska say a 21-year-old man drove a stolen forklift more than 3 miles while intoxicated to retrieve a truck he crashed. Police Lieutenant Matt Sodden says just before 6 a.m. Monday, Alexander Glushko of Delta Junction drove off a road in a pickup and crashed into a pipe stacked in a company yard. The pickup was left straddling the pipe. Police say Glushko then walked to George Horner Ice Park, stole a forklift, and drove off with it. An Alaska railroad worker spotted the forklift driving by the crash site, and police were at the scene when Glushko looped back. Glushko has been charged with felony driving under the influence of alcohol. He remained in jail Tuesday, and a message seeking comment from a public defender agency was not returned. So I just thought that was just hilarious that the guy was so wasted that he wrecked his truck, but he's still like, huh, I'm going to go steal something and get my truck out half of a pipe and drove a fork. I would love to have seen a forklift being driven. For, you know, 3 miles. I just think that's so hilarious that was his first thought. Not call a friend.
First of all, he got away with drunk driving.
Right, he did it.
Like, he had gotten away with the crime of drunk driving and crashing his truck. So all he had to do was go home and stay home a little bit.
I know. I mean, he could have easily. So he said, he made the decision. I got away with drunk driving. I better go drunk drive.
Yeah, drunk drive's a not street legal vehicle.
I would love to
get him on the podcast.
Yeah, we'll see if we
can. I would love to get some Alaskans on the podcast for sure, because they are wild folks. All right, this next one now I think is interesting because it comes from our state of South Carolina. And it has to deal with Erskine College. Y'all know that?
Yeah, I know people went to Erskine College.
My good friend Elizabeth went there for a while. And this comes from SB Nation. South Carolina College, with two out gay athletes, bans homosexuality in the name of God.
What, the school bans it?
Yep. Isn't that crazy? After two volleyball players came out as gay, Erskine College, its board of trustees, and its athletic department were pressured to make the school an inhospitable place for gay athletes. And it says, now Erskine College has issued a new official statement, but after what they have done, it says, Christ affirms that marital union is between a man and a woman. The Bible teaches that monogamous marriage between a man and a woman is God's intended design for humanity, and that sexual intimacy has its proper place only within the context of marriage. And it keeps on going on to say that we believe in the Bible and what it teaches, and that even though they have people that attend their school and pay for the school there, that they have to be against it. And that is kind of in their statements now. So what do you think about that? Like, I mean, should those athletes leave or should they stay and try and change the culture? Is this even important?
I mean, well, first of all, I guess I'm confused, but I thought all volleyball players were gay.
Male or female,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
It just doesn't matter.
I volleyball thought that was a prerequisite for volleyball in the first place. No, but I think that's absolutely insane thing to do. I mean, even if you think it's the only parallel that I think you ever really need for homosexual lifestyle is unrepentant, greedy lifestyle, because people disagree about how greedy is really greedy or not greedy. Like, okay, people disagree about a way of viewpoints of money that are acceptable or not. So if for some people it might be wrong, according to some people, for people to have 10,000 square foot homes or have millions of dollars that you don't share, I'm sure there's people in the world with points of view, Christian points of view, that say it's not okay to live in America and make $100,000 and just keep the money for yourself and only give 10% to your church. That has to, that might be a sin. There's people that think that it is. And if so, those people that live that greed, that lifestyle is are in permanent unrepentant sin of greed.
Yeah.
So, but those people don't believe that it is a sin.
Right.
So, I would assume that these volleyball players are either right or wrong about whether homosexuality in the way or who they are is sinful, and that's it. So, they, so how would you deal with an unrepentant sinner is the question. How do you deal with people that may do something that you think's wrong, but they think it's right? How do you deal with that Christian? You ban them?
Yeah, you don't.
Like if there's somebody that goes, I think it's okay to eat this much food all the time, and you go, I don't think it is. Then that means that you think that is an unrepentant sinner who lives a sinful lifestyle unrepentantly. The person that always eats too much dessert. And you argue with them. They say, no, this is okay. And you say, no, it's not okay. Unrepentant sinner.
See, I want,
fully for his whole life.
I want to agree with you 100%. And I think even naturally I do. But the scripture that really throws me for a loop is when Paul says, see, I really do believe in the Bible, Matt. When Paul says, hey, you know, when I'm talking about sexually immoral and the greedy and the swindlers and all that, I'm talking about people outside of the church. Like, don't judge them. How dare you judge people outside of the church? But then he says,
you should judge those inside
someone,
the church.
If there's someone inside the church. So is the distinction someone that says, yes, I am sinning. Yes, I'm being a consumer. No, I'm going to do it.
Right. Let me address that. I think you missed my point. What I'm saying is you have somebody in your church. In fact, do you not have people in your church that you think are eat too much?
Right.
Okay. Do you think it's possible to sit down with them?
His first thought was me.
And you would say to that person, you should therefore, according to that scripture, go to that person and say, listen, I think you're eating too much. I think your lifestyle is gluttonous, correct?
Right.
Okay. Now, the guy on the other side of your desk at your in your counseling meeting who you're telling that you're accusing him of a sinful lifestyle of gluttony, now he's going to look at you and say, Joey, I respect what you're saying. I thank you for telling me that as your pastor. I love Jesus. But here's the thing. According to the way I read the scripture, same scripture as you, I do not believe that this is gluttony, you see. Mm. This is actually okay. God wants me to eat this. Now, if I eat the other stuff, maybe, yeah. But listen, trust me. I feel right about this. I feel called this way. I think God made me with this appetite. This is right for me to eat this way. this is the way. This is okay. This is not sin, Joey. And I'm offended that you would say that, but I kind of respect it. But anyway, and now how do you treat that person? You disagree about whether. But if you're right, that person lives the rest of their life as an unrepentant, vile, filthy sinner with a mistaken identity that thinks they're supposed to eat that way.
Right.
But it wouldn't bother you. I mean, you wouldn't kick that person out of your church and say, unrepentant sinner, gone.
I agree. Who do we kick out of the church? Paul seems to think we should kick some people out. Who? That's what I'm trying to understand. Yeah. Is I don't.
Yeah,
who
I'll
do
leave
we
it there.
Out?
I'm just saying if there's somebody
who's tough, I agree.
If there's somebody who is an unrepentant sinner, I'm suggesting that maybe we all are unrepentant sinners in areas that we don't think something's sinful, but we're actually deceived.
Yeah.
So,
like, I mean, this one to me is low hanging fruit, no brainer. Like Driscoll told the story one time where a lady basically was setting out to have sex with married men.
Yeah.
And he said, look, you need to knock it off. And she's like, I'm not going to. He said, well, you're not coming back.
Sure.
That's protecting people. But the example that you gave, I mean, I think we would all agree, well, that guy that's eating too much, you know, he certainly can't keep doing that. I mean, not unrepentantly.
Well, I mean, you might just go, well, I guess we don't know who's right and who's wrong. And
I think going back to the story, though, they just felt pressured from, they're associated with the Presbyterian Church, and they just felt pressured to make sure a statement that they came out against it. So that's the thing. I think for sure one thing that Joey said, going back to Paul and what he was saying, would be we don't need to say sin just for the sake of saying it. So the person knows, hey, just so you know, I know what you're doing is sin. That's not good. If we're actually bringing it up as a way to say, hey, listen, I don't know. I think what you're doing might be bad for you. I'm saying it. I'm not trying to impose on your rights. I'm not trying to, you know, end your, you know, be mean to you or all this stuff. I'm just trying to say, hey, listen, this could be a possibility. That makes it safe to bring stuff up that you disagree with. And it not, but if you're just saying, hey, gay is wrong, I'm going to say gay is wrong. That's all you're saying.
You know, what's weird about that occurs to me is maybe the problem is an institution dealing with something that's an individual. You see, right. like what you just said is there's probably a way to talk to people and even bring up, I think this is wrong. I think this isn't good for you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about this. Well, in institutional documents and policies can't do that. People can.
Right.
So when you try to, you have two individuals that you see as problems and you want to deal with it on an institutional level, that's kind of, that's not,
yeah,
that's certainly not good for the, you know, for the individuals.
It's not, I agree. A good way to treat them. I think it's the epidemic that the church faces is, it's really interesting to me in American Christian culture that American Christians are so strong on keep the government out of my business. You know, I'm going to eat what I want, carry the guns that I want, do this what I want. You know, the big man, the big government doesn't get a say on me. I have my rights. But they are so on board with the big church telling everybody else what to do.
Yep.
You know what I mean? The big church can go into people's bedrooms. The big church can, you know, tell yep. you that the, you know, the ozone isn't shrinking. The big church can say all this stuff. But yeah, don't come and get my guns.
Keep the government out of my business. That's the church's job.
Yeah. All right, there goes my last news story today, guys. And I think this one is really funny. I think this is even something that, Joey, maybe you've considered. I'm not sure. But this is something you might have wanted to try in the past, or maybe you have tried it and just nobody knows about it.
Dream Away weight loss program?
Michael Chico posed as a cop to cut into the fast food line. This comes from AP in Odessa, Texas. A West Texas man has been charged with impersonating an officer by using sirens and flashing lights to skip to the head of the drive-thru line at a fast food restaurant. Odessa police say Michael Chico was arrested after an off-duty officer spotted a truck with law enforcement trappings. Corporal Steve LeSueur says Chico's vehicle looked like an unmarked police vehicle. The officer who saw the truck cut in line Saturday thought the driver, who was wearing a uniform, was a volunteer firefighter and followed Chico to some apartments. LeSueur says that when confronted, Chico said he wasn't an officer and also used the lights and sirens to get through the traffic lights. Chico was freed Sunday on a $15,000 bond. Online jail records don't list an attorney for him. So basically, he just thought, man, this line sucks.
He
hops in front, gets the food really quickly, and moves online. Because you know the number one thing about in Texas and across the South and up to the North, all over America, is that fast food ain't fast.
No.
Everybody knows that. So I almost think, man, you got to do whatever you can to try and break the cycle.
So what's he communicating, though? Is he saying, I've got an emergency I need to deal with, but it's not enough of an emergency for me to skip
fast food? That's true.
He's just trying to hurt. Yeah, I mean, there's a crime. I mean,
anybody,
you know,
sees that, they're like, wow, it can't be that much
of an
emergency.
He's got a 619 on the east side of town, so it, you know, he needs to get in the front of the line to get a Whopper,
right,
so he can get just over there quicker.
To me, that's just reeks of hypocrisy, no matter how you cut it.
No, it's hilarious because, I mean, the thing about it is he just, you get a little taste of that, and like, oh, this is working. You're just going to keep pushing it. Oh, I'll run a red light here. I'll do this, that, there, and then just keep
that's
going.
Funny.
Eventually,
he told the officer other stuff. I would have only said, yeah, I did it this one time, I promise.
Yeah.
I just thought it'd be funny. I was goofing around just to cut in line. But he started really being honest
you
and telling
him. You think you could have lied your way out of it, you're just saying.
Yeah, I think I would have said that. I would have tried to lie as much as possible, any way possible, for sure. So, all right, that's my news. That's it for today.
All right. Thank you.
Live from Australia.
News.
We up in Toowoomba.
All right. So we can end this episode as soon as, you know, Toby and Joey can make up for their fight earlier.
Joey, I'm sorry. I thought I was clearly joking. I think that you didn't see that, so I'm sorry. Why are you laughing? I'm being honest right now.
Sorry, Joey didn't understand you.
No, I'm saying
sorry
you don't get it.
No, that's not what I meant to say.
You don't get it.
That's
you
not
never
what
will.
I meant to say.
I'm super sorry.
What I'm saying is, I thought you realized I was joking, and you didn't. You thought I was being serious that you choked.
I thought you realized I was joking.